either of you ever heard of the Sunshine Cafe that was in Gujar Street?
That's where the big murder was years ago.
Yeah, that guy murdered his family.
Mr. Balaban shot him all, didn't he? That stopped us. I was working in Adelaide at the time, like around Honley Street, but that sort of stopped all of Adelaide. You know, we were amazed at think this sort of thing could happen in town. And then the Sunshine
Did you
Cafe.
Hear it?
I don't remember it.
Sunshine Cafe, oh yeah, that was, well, was that a bit, there was about three people killed there, wasn't there?
Well, he murdered his wife and his family, his children, and someone else who was staying there.
Yeah.
People that either worked in the market or were around the market that used to go there a lot. And I got the idea that maybe there was some gambling that happened there. Maybe tulip or something.
Yeah, but I remember that well because, you know, a murder in Adelaide, that sort of stopped the world, but nowadays, it's a murder every other day, isn't it? So nobody takes any notice of it anymore. But back those days, it was something terrible.
Did people talk about why it happened? What it was all about?
Not a great deal, only that he killed somebody in France before he commanded, didn't he? He was a real bad one when they finally caught up with him. He murdered somebody else down Severton Way somewhere and they finally caught him on it all. So he was a bad bit of stuff.
And he must have been associated with the market somehow because he's come up in some of the market
stories. Yeah, well, any old people would know about that because that stopped Adelaide. Because when it happened, you know, this can't happen in Adelaide, but, you know, they brought, because then they blamed all the migrants for coming in because he was a migrant.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
It does sound familiar. Nothing strange.
Now we have one every day, don't we?
Yeah, well, that's true. Like, you started when you were nine? Didn't you?
We moved to the hills when I was three. We did Angus Street when I was a kid. I can vaguely remember that. Times were pretty tough back in the 30s. And we lived in Angus Street. We had a little two-room place which fronted right on Angus Street. And at the back there was a shed. There was another family and that. And over here was another family, you know. It was all off. And then...
did your father do?
He worked in the market.
He worked in the market?
He worked in the East End market quite a bit. And... Mum worked in a shop just across the road from there. But you know, it was all temporary, you know, nobody worked full-time sort of business. It was, you got what you could. And then Fred Redden, because my mum grew up in the prairie and around there when she was a crouch. And Fred Redden was in the market and he said, well, I've moved into a new house up there. The old house is there. You could come up there and live. So we all jumped on his old truck and rattled off up to the prairie.
So your family and the Reddens go back a long way?
The Crouches and the Reddens go back a long way.
The Crouches and the Reddens,
Yeah, I've got a history of the Crouches when they come out here in the 1840s, you know, it was all work. And so we settled in the old house up there, which was 100 odd years old when we moved in, you know, it was pretty rugged stuff. But that's what it was. We went to the Millbrook School.
Yep.
And raced home from school to work in the orchard for 6 months a week.
What would you do in the orchard?
You picked up sticks, you picked up stones, you done all the... When they were ploughing, you had to go along and pick up all the stones behind
after
the plough.
You'd follow the plough.
When they were pruning, you picked up all the sticks.
Yeah.
There's always thousands of things to do. Pick up apples that fell on the ground. Because those days, every apple went to market. Nowadays, most of the apples are left on the ground if they fall off a tree. They say nobody wants them. There's no factories anymore. There's people producing apples, but what do they do with the rest of them? See, in those days there was a lot of factories in town. There were Booker's and Mum's Own and Rosella and all those places. IXL.
And
all used to take all the fruit.
Making jam.
Making jam and make anything.
And preserving the fruit.
Yeah, and preserves. Yeah, tin fruit.
And people don't do that now.
Croydon brand. Well, there's SPC over in Auburn. There's nobody here doing it. It's just wasted.
So does fruit really go to waste now?
A lot of fruit goes to waste. There's 4,000 tonne of oranges got buried last year.
Whoa.
Up the river then.
That's terrible, isn't it?
That's pretty sick.
That's food. Yeah.
But we used to grade all the fruit, and there was first grade and second grade. Well, nowadays the supermarkets don't want any second grade for a start. Anything with a mark on, the supermarkets won't have.
So how would you grade them? What would you...
They had a grader and most of it was done by hand then. They used to grade them in the size. The grader would run along and they'd all fall into their bins in their right size. And then by hand, they'd grade them.
So if they had a bruise or something like that, you'd put them to one side.
They'd go into second grade or they'd go into factory grade.
Yeah.
Then the factories would take the other stuff. But, I mean, some of the best sauce Brooklyn's ever made had about 7 different fruits in it. When they used to make tomato sauce at the end of the run, and all the fruit that was left over, from pumpkins to plums or anything, went in the sauce. And it was all good sauce. Their first grade sauce was Croydon brand, their second grade sauce was Goldfinch brand, and the Goldfinch brand sold best. That had everything in it.
Croydon brand?
Croydon brand, yeah. Brookers, down on the Port Road.
And do they still exist?
Hmm?
Do they still exist?
No, they're all gone. They're all gone. All the factories have gone down. We go to see Johnny Brooker, one of the descendants. He's still down, living down in the city, but he was a grandson of the Reddins.
The only one I remember, and that's just because of the Rosella still there. The Rosella, you know, is it Alberton? There's a shop with the big Rosella.
There's still a few of those shops around when they used to have the big Rosella, but Rosella factory was along Paynham Road. And then it went to Cash and Carry, didn't it? It was Cash and Carry for a long time.
Yeah, when they sold it.
And Gardeners, or Mum's Own, that went to, what do they call it now? Jam Factory, where they do all the artist work and whatnot. It's an artistic place where they...
That's been converted into housing now. That was the IXL,
that's
wasn't
all gone
it?
Again. No, IXL was down on... IXL was down on West Beach Road, where the bus terminal is now. That was all IXL.
Yeah.
So was the Jam Factory, that's now the Jam Factory, ever a jam factory?
Oh, yeah.
It used to be on
Paynham Road.
Yeah.
It was Mum's Own and Gardener's Supply. Gardener's... was Gardeners, and they changed the name to Mum's Own for some reason. But where we were, we used to live with fruit all those places on the way down. But then the boss's daughter married Jack Brooker, so from then on everything went to Brooker, straight down to Brooker.
So what was it about being 9 that meant that you had to start doing that? Like when you were 7 and 8, you were considered too little?
You did everything. There was jobs for everybody.
So there was? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
as soon as you just started school, you got home as quick as you could to either pick up apples or pick up stones or clean up around the shed. All the daylight hours were working. There was no in between.
Yeah.
There was no... my brother and I, he was 4 years older than me, you know. He used to have to stack up the crates and whatnot, but... there was always work. There's a few houses on that big place up there, and all the workers worked on the orchard, you know. They were all workers for the orchard.
So all the families lived there, worked there,
And the boss.
And you all knew each other?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Freddie Redden, he was pretty smart. He'd pick up a family in the market that had quite a few kids, you know. He picked up the Buckleys. They come down from Gowga. They'd never seen fruit grown on a tree, they'd never seen the beach, they'd never seen any animals in the zoo. They'd always been at Gowga, farming.
Where's Gowga?
Out the other side of Mindry Halidon, on the other side of Manham.
Okay.
Up on the Wakery line.
Yeah.
And these kids had never seen anything. Because when they see all this fruit grown on a tree, they eat fruit every day. But there was Reg and John and Eileen and a few of them, all good workers. And the boss was keen enough to pick up a family, had a few kids, you know. It was all good work. They all got employment there.
So the whole family would get employment?
Oh, yeah, they all had to work on the orchard, or you got out the house. That's how it was. There were no houses available much. And if you didn't work on the orchard, well, you'd get somebody else.
And the kids would all be working, and would they actually get pocket money as a result of it?
Oh, yeah, they get their 6 pence a week like the rest of us, you know.
What would 6 pence a week buy then?
You got the pictures. Ride your bike to Gummeracker Pictures of a Saturday night. Or Lobethal Pictures.
So that was the entertainment?
Well,
Yeah,
some of the lads would ride their bike out to Lobethal or Gummeracker. I remember one night we convinced our mum to go, and we got the horse and the jinker and trotted off out to Gummeracker. And my mum was fairly religious, she didn't like anything too bloodthirsty. And damn me if the picture wasn't Arabian Nights, where they cut them all up and sliced them up. Mum got the jinker and come home again. About the only night I think she went to the pictures, you know.
That was it. She never went again.
I mean, she worked like all hell then because she had to have the wood stove going by 5 o'clock in the morning, because when the fruit season was on, there'd been anything up to 12 or 14 men boarding with us. There's a big old shed around the back of our house where they all used to sleep, and she used to feed them. He used to give her extra 12 and sixpence a week to feed all these fellows. So she'd have to have the fire going by 5 o'clock in the morning to give them all eggs and bacon for breakfast.
Eggs and bacon?
Mm-hmm. We had our own chooks, and she'd have to buy some bacon. And then they'd all off to go out to work, and then she'd go in and milk all the cows.
Oh, my goodness.
She'd milk all the cows, put it through the separator, make her own butter and so forth.
She'd have to make all the bread too.
Mm-hmm. And
make all the bread.
There's always a big dish, enamel dish by the wood stove. And the bread rising. To form up your own loaves. Yeah. Always fresh bread every day. There's a lot of plucks here, you know, in the fruit season. It died off.
Would you have to make smoko for them as well?
Yeah, well, they all come in for lunch.
Yeah.
You have to have a hot lunch.
Yeah.
Those days, you had an hour for lunch and you had a hot dinner. So she'd have to get the cow's milk, get home and get a leg of lamb on or something for lunch. It'll be a full hot dinner.
And how long would that be? That's just during the picking season?
Oh, yeah. Through the picking season. Yeah, then it died off. We'd get a bit of itch after that.
So like, would that be 3 months, the picking season?
Yeah, three months, yeah.
Every day, cook a roast for 14 men.
Yeah, and then Fred used to say to her,
probably not
if you get the lunch, if you get them all made the lunch quick enough, and you've got some spare time in the afternoon, I'd like you to go over and pick some plums over in Jolly's paddock, you know.
How would she ever have spare time?
Yeah, she'd get over there and do a couple of hours picking, and she'd have to get back and get the teas ready for the fellows, you know. But that'd be after dark when they come in for the evening meal. Because they'd have to load the truck to go to the market and all that before they could come home. And
long days.
Yeah, she put into long days when you got back, and then I had to make sure there was kindling wood there for the fire in the morning, otherwise I'd be in strife, because that stove had to be well and truly gone by 5 o'clock in the morning.
So would you keep all the animals to kill? Like, would you kill your
own
animals? Oh, yeah,
we killed our own sheep. Yeah.
You killed your own sheep, but not pigs.
When she had men there, like, boarding there, well, we could kill some lambs to feed them or whatnot. That was my brother and I's job to kill them and skin them and hang them up in the cool room ready for Mum to cut them up when she wanted it, as she wanted it.
And did you use the whole animal?
Yeah. Liver and brains and all that, yeah.
That it all be eaten or given to the dogs?
All be eaten. No.
Did you have dogs?
I had sheepdogs. Yeah.
Sheepdogs.
Yeah, quite often I'd have to get the sheep in when I got home from school, because there was a big orchard, and at the back of the orchard there was all the sheep paddocks. I'd have to get whiz around here and get all them in, because you had some sheep that had some bad feet. I'd have to bring them in every night and put them through the little trough that had some disinfectant in it for their feet, run them through that, and take them back up in the paddock again. That was a standard procedure a few weeks while the sheep had bad feet.
Did you keep the sheep just to eat locally, or
he sold a lot of them. We killed one now and again. But during the war, every year he gave 1,000 cases of apple and 100 sheep, 100 fat lambs for the food for Britain. It was a big organisation he had there, Fred Redden's.
And were they slaughtered here?
No, they were slaughtered down at the Metropolitan Abattoirs.
Oh, but here in Australia, frozen, and then frozen.
And taken and over, yeah. Back in the days when the abattoirs were going down there. Have to run them down there.
Wow. So you just give them?
He did, yeah. I think he was going to... I think he wanted to be a surfer. He was... he was along that line. He had a lot of property at Kersbrook. He had a square mile at Kersbrook, right in the middle of Kersbrook, a big flat area. And we used to grow swedes and turnips for the army during the war. We used to go out there and plough it up and cultivate it and roll it. And those days, you didn't ride on any of those things. You walked behind them all the time.
Right.
You had a couple of horses in a cultivator, and you walked behind it up and down, up and down. But the ground used to be that hard. We used to kick them out the ground. They were that hard to try and get out the ground. But anyhow, they loved them. Yeah.
So you knew all the time that this was for the army? You were told that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we used to keep all our papers. When they were spraying, they used to get all their arsenate lead in brown paper bags. So I used to wash all them out and take them to school for the school patriotic fund. And you get a medal and some bars on it when you collect so much paper for the war effort. Everything was for the war effort, you know, scraps.
So what was the paper that you were collecting?
The arsenate of lead, when they sprayed the orchard, when they come in big, solid, like cement bags, heavy paper bags. But they wouldn't take them with the arsenate of lead on it. So I used to have to tear them in halves, put them out the back on some sticks and wash them all down, get rid of the arsenate of lead.
So where was arsenated lead on them?
Doesn't sound like a good thing to be breathing in.
No.
Oh,
you're still here, but...
Yeah, still here.
And why was it on them anyway?
Hmm?
Why was there lead on them anyway?
Oh, you just had to wash it out. When the chaps had tipped the lead into the big tank to mix it, there'd still be a bit of arsenated lead in the paper. So you'd cut them open and just wash them to make sure...
Was that a bug spray or something?
Huh?
Was that a bug spray or something, a pesticide or...
What was it for the orchard.
Oh, yeah, right.
Codron moss.
Yeah.
So you had to make sure...
There was no arsenate lead left on the bags when we took them into school.
And then you'd get a reward for that?
You'd get a badge or a medal or something. You know, so you collect up so much for the school patriotic fund.
How old were you then?
Well, we're still going to school.
Yeah.
10, 11 or something.
Wow. Wow, I'd never even heard of that sort of thing. So the patriotic fund was that?
The school patriotic fund. Oh, they collected tons and tons of paper for the war effort.
And so, you knew what you were doing, and that was for the
well, everybody had in the back of their mind, we're going to do all we can for the war effort, you know, right from little kids.
Do you remember that time as well? Yeah. Did you have a patriotic fund?
Yeah.
So what would your school do?
Oh, we collected paper, newspaper.
Newspapers.
But anyone that was old enough to knit knitted socks.
Yeah.
So who taught, your mum taught you to knit?
Yeah, well, my father actually taught me to knit.
Yeah?
Yeah, that was a big thing.
Yeah,
so people were encouraged to knit, big effort.
Big effort.
Where would you get the wool from?
Well, I don't remember that.
Well, they could get khaki wool, wouldn't they? Because our school used to get khaki wool given to
us. We more than likely had donations
of wool
brought in to us, but I don't remember that.
Yeah. Were you on a farm at the time?
No.
Where were you? Going to school?
In the suburbs at Challa. Down at Kilkenny.
Yeah.
Or Woodville Park, really.
Oh, Dawn was born in Clare, wasn't
you? Yeah, I was, but not on a farm.
Yeah, yeah. So when the war was on and everything was focused, day-to-day life was focused around supporting the war effort?
Oh, yeah. Everybody. Everybody thought about the war. You know, what can we do for the war? I remember the Millbrook School getting big skeins of khaki wool. We used to roll it up, then the girls would be knitting socks for it. We had one girl there, Mary Ludwig, she could knit while she was blindfolded and go like the clappers. She used to knit socks like glory, you know, down around, turn the heel and...
Did you ever find out if the soldiers liked them?
I don't know.
I guess they had kids, you know.
Some of them would like a new warm, new pair of socks, I reckon, where they were.
So was it different, the food and everything that you had during the war period, was that different?
Oh, it was all rationed.
It was rationed.
We were lucky because we cooled our own meat.
Yeah.
Had all the milk we could drink and all the cream and all the butter.
Yeah.
So Mum could trade butter coupons for other things, like tea coupons. We were always short of tea. Those days, everybody drank tea.
Yeah.
Buckets of it. So we were always struggling for tea and sugar. But Mum had butter coupons that she could, and clothing coupons.
And who would she trade with?
Or a relation, her auntie, or her sisters.
Oh, just, yeah.
She had about 12 or 14 sisters or something. Or
so was that a formal thing or informal? You'd just do
informal,
it?
Informal. And then when we had the prisoners of war, see, the coupons had to be used in a certain time. You got issued with so many months of coupons. And if you hadn't used them in that time, they were null and void, see. Well, then when we had the... three prisoners of war, the Italian prisoners of war, living with us, they got army coupons. And they went forever. You could trade them forever. There was no time limit on them. So she could trade their butter and clothing coupons for more tea. So it sort of evened up a bit. We were pretty well, but people living in town that that didn't have free access to butter and milk and meat, you know, they have coupons for it. It must be a lot harder for them.
Did you listen to radio?
We had a radio. We got a radio in 1939, I think.
So how did you know about the war? What was it through the radio? Well, the watchman
come on at 1 o'clock every day, and the watchman was the big speaker on the radio. He come on at 12 o'clock because none of us kids were allowed to talk. The men were all listening to the wireless while the watchman.
And that was the same for you?
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
George is a couple of years ahead of me.
You sat there and said nothing.
I remember the dark nights we sat in the dark. Mainly, that's my biggest memory of the war.
So the Germans couldn't see you?
It was darkness. You didn't expose light.
We were blacked out completely up there. Blackout paper on every window, every door. Because they were dead scared the Japs were going to bomb Milbert Reservoir, I think.
And was that after bombing in Darwin?
After the bombing in Darwin, they were sure the Japs would be down here next, and
they
thought if they bombed the Milbert Reservoir, they'd wipe out Adelaide too.
So do you remember hearing about Pearl Harbour?
Oh, yeah.
You?
Yeah, that was all in the
slightly.
Paper.
Yeah.
That was all in the paper. Well, we've heard about Pearl Harbour ever since.
Well, absolutely.
We didn't hear much about bombing the Darwin, but we heard a lot about Pearl Harbour.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's the media for you. Mm. Yeah. There's
been 20 movies made of Pearl Harbour.
So was there a big announcement on the radio?
They announced it. Who was it? Come on, Prime Minister, those days, wasn't it? It was Menzies. England's at war. He come on later, didn't he? Had announced that England was at war, and that's therefore Australia will be at war too, you know. Yeah, so it was dim, dark days.
Mm. So it would have taken up a whole chunk of, like, people your age, just childhood.
Yeah. You didn't know any better. When I lived in the city, you can only play in the street. We play in Angus Street, play cricket in Angus Street with some of the little kids, you know.
Yeah.
And diphtheria was killing them like flies around the place, you know. And I come home from kindy one day with a terrible sore throat. I could hardly breathe. And Mum sat up all night with me, and every now and again she'd get a straw full of licorice powder and blow it down my throat. Terrible bloody stuff, but that's what they did those days. Anyway, I pulled through, but my little mate I used to play with, he went. We lost him.
From diphtheria?
Yeah, diphtheria.
How do you catch diphtheria?
Hmm?
It's just through people coughing on each other.
The throat infection, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's gradually got worse. But I was 3 years old, I don't remember much about it, but we had to play in the street and in the gutters and all around Angus Street. It was a pretty toppy looking place those days.
Yeah.
We were all huddled together. There was 10 families in a little block, you know. No high rise, just all in together. So it was a bit of a godsend. And when Fred said, you can come up and live in this old house, which got burnt down in the bushfire in 83. So Mandy never saw it, did you?
Where'd your dad come from?
Broken Hill. Don't know much about Dad. He bobbed up from Broken Hill. And,
you don't know how he met your mum?
No, we know very little.
Know
a lot about Mum's ancestors and all that. We've never checked up on what. I know Dad was a Catholic in the early days. When he come down there, somebody knew him down the street and dobbed him in the Father Hooligan, and he come out there and wanted him to go to church. He come one Friday night when Dad had a few beers. That was the end of that. He wasn't going anywhere.
So, did your dad ever talk about his parents?
No, didn't hear much about Dad's parents.
He didn't have them as grandparents. They weren't around the place.
No, my granddad was there. Like Mum's dad was there.
Yeah.
But no, they were all in Broken Hill. Now and again, the Bonds and the Carmody's were relations of ours from Broken Hill, and those kids used to come down and stay with us. But we never ever followed up as to why they were relations or anything about it, you know, just sort of died off. But,
did you know your grandparents on both sides?
Not on both sides. My mother's side. My father's mother died when he was 19. grandfather lived on his own, I think. I don't know really.
Yeah, yeah.
But I knew him only, but I was only a baby, so I wouldn't, you know, have anything to say about him when he died.
Mm. Were they from Clare too?
Port Wakefield, I think. Mum's family were from Port Wakefield. Oh, you just, you either was right in with it or you weren't.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you remember things that you want to remember.
Yeah.
I never knew my grandmother because she died at an early age after having 14 kids.
Yeah. Well, how old was probably your mother when she died?
Oh, how old was Mum when she died?
Oh, I was pregnant with Amanda.
Amanda's fault.
Yeah.
43 years ago, she would have died.
78, I think.
Mm. She's 78? 40,
yeah.
Yeah.
45, Charlie. Like
yeah. So she lived a fairly long life. It's not like
hard life. She was a big woman and she worked like all hell. You know, when you look back to see what she'd done on that orchard for the boss. And
did it get easier for her in her later life?
Oh, yeah. When we moved down to town, it was quite easy for her.
Yeah.
Remember the church and had some nice friends down there at West Croydon. And yeah, much better for her. But then she got sick. We put her in the QEH and they said, nothing we can do for her. The stomach full of cancer. So
she died of cancer.
That was it.
Mm. Yeah.
That was it. But grandfather, he married Annie Hode. There's a lot of Hodes around the Adelaide Hills. In those days, you married the girl next door. There was no travelling. You know, couldn't go far in a bullet, right? And then four of Annie's brothers married four of his sisters. Five Hodes married five Crouches.
Yeah.
So there'd be a family reunion at Christmas time, wouldn't there?
And a lot of the kids would have looked alike.
Yeah. There'd been a lot there.
The cousins would have, yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And do you have many relatives around still?
No, most of them have died off. There's not a great many of them. There's a couple down at Victor Harbour. But other than that, there's not.
So getting back to the market, what's your earliest memory of the central market?
The central market?
Yeah.
Oh, other than we used to take fruit around here on those barrows.
Did it look much the same as it does now?
I think we just went in the door and unloaded the fruit and went again. You didn't look around much. Yeah. Had to get back and do the next one.
Do the next one,
But I remember helping Dad push the cart around there, you know, and keeping out the tram lines.
Would you buy food from there?
Oh, no, we had all our own fruit.
Because you had all your own fruit, so you didn't need anything.
Yeah. The butcher from Gumaraki used to come around now and again, and you could buy a few sausages and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
He had a cart, he used to come around.
Did you ever see the continental food?
No. Never any of that sort of food.
So it would have been there, just probably, not on display?
I don't think there was any around those days. We never ever knew any. We had our lamb and veggies and that was it.
Yeah.
Mum would make
but I mean the Italians, there were some Italians that had the...
Spaghetti by the mile.
Yeah.
See, when the prisoners first came there, Mum had to board them, three prisoners.
When the prisoners of war...
were in their red tunics. Oh, World War One tunics dyed red, you know, you could see them for miles. And they were nice blokes, there's no doubt about it. They didn't want to fight, you know. And they come there and they were at our table. We had a big, long table, you know. You'd be 14 or 15 men around this table. Mum would be supplying the food. And they would put 7 or 8 spoonfuls of sugar in a cup of tea because they couldn't drink tea. It was terrible stuff. I don't know what they did drink, but their pound of sugar soon went. That's why we always look for sugar. So then Mum would give them a hot dinner, which we thought was top tucker, you know, roast lamb and all the veggies. And they'd get a bottle of olive oil and tip over the lot of it. They'd all be bloody swimming in olive oil. And we'd be chucking up looking at them, but they'd whoop it all there. So this went on for a while. And then one day, Mum said that one Sunday morning, because the boss used to go to church Sunday morning, there wasn't much done Sunday morning, she said to him, "What do you want to eat? You can come up here on Sunday morning and cook what you want." And they said, "Get us some spaghetti. Want big box spaghetti." So off the town she goes, and down the Star Grocery you could buy a box, like a half case so big, full of spaghetti, the long
spaghetti.
Had
you eaten spaghetti before?
Oh, we'd had a bit now and again, now and again, when Mum cooked some, but not to this extent, you know. So she says, I've got the spaghetti. Yeah, I want some tomatoes and whatnot. And up they come on Sunday morning. And the first thing they done was got our old boiler. We used to have a big old cast iron boiler that you had on the stove to cook stuff. And they scoured all that out. Oh, had to be clean for the spaghetti, see, and they boiled all that out. And then they filled the damn thing up with spaghetti and cooked it. Miles of it. And everybody in around the table got this great plate of spaghetti piled high with tomato sauce and what, all the tomatoes and that on it. And we looked at it, Jesus, we've got to eat this. And we're trying to eat spaghetti with a fork and it's fallen off. And these blokes, look, they put their fork in the middle, they wind it in, and it's in their mouth and they're gone. And after that plate was gone, they had another plate.
They were so happy.
This was home from home for them. Yeah. So the mum said, oh, well, what else would we give them to eat? Spaghetti. But they ate spaghetti all you like. You could feed them with spaghetti with tomato, either tomatoes or tomato sauce over it, you know. And they wolfed that down better than a roast dinner.
So where would they have got the olive oil from?
Well, Mum had some olive oil, but she had to go to the Star Grocery to get more. She had to go to the Star Grocery. You could buy it in a tin down there at the Star Grocery, down at the bottom end of Honley Street.
So that would have been unusual, wouldn't it, olive oil?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nobody used olive oil like that.
But, so did she get that for
She bought that for the Italians.
So how did they choose her to be the one to feed them?
Well, the boss brought them home and said, he owes three more to feed.
Okay, so just, used them as labourers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he was smart. He had all his sheds concreted and everything while they were there because they're masters at concrete, the Italians. Yeah. And he had all these sheds, all the run-ups of the shed, all cemented and whatnot.
And were there men who'd been captured, like, fighting, or were they...?
Well, they captured 40,000 of them in just one day over in the desert. And they brought them back and put them on a boat and sent them out to Australia.
40,000?
40,000 they captured. See, when the war started, everybody in Italy had to go to war. I mean, Dorio was one of the Italians we had there. His father owned a big vineyard, and he offered the government so many lire or whatever it is to keep him home to run the vineyard. No, everybody must go. So he didn't want to go. Like thousands of others, they didn't want to go in the fight down the bloody desert. So that's where they were. So once they captured them, which wasn't hard apparently, they put them on a boat and sent them to Australia. They didn't even know where Australia was. So they come right around to Melbourne. When they got to Melbourne, they put them on a train through the desert all night up to Loveday. It was a big army camp on the river. Loveday was a prisoner of war camp. And from there, we could get them, the people that wanted labour could apply and get some Italians. But oh, they loved it on the orchard. They brought in more fruit and done more work than anybody else.
Did they?
They had their own horse and cart when they're picking fruit, and they always brought in more fruit than anybody.
So could they have got away if they wanted to?
Oh, I don't think they wanted to. They knew they were miles from anywhere.
Yeah.
One of them had one of my old atlases, and he saw all the little islands above Australia, and they thought if they could get up there and swim between those islands, they might get back to Asia and get around Italy again.
Swim.
That was the thinking. But they never knew where Australia was.
Yeah.
You know. Poor buggers were captured over there. Mm-hmm.
I wonder how many of them ended up living in Australia.
Oh, heaps of them come back. Greatest place in the world.
Yeah.
But every week, every fortnight, the army canteen come around and give them everything they wanted. All the cigarettes and chocolates and tinned peanuts and stuff that we'd never seen during the war. It was all free to them. Anyway,
to the prisoners?
Yeah.
Why?
The army canteen come around, they'd look after them. Oh, unreal.
So they treated them really well?
Oh, treated them like bloody royalty.
And they gave them food that you didn't have?
No, we didn't. We'd never seen a chocolate or any of that sort of stuff during the war. That was all gone.
Wow, I've never seen that before. That's like, you hear the story about the ones that got sent to internment camps. And in New South Wales, wasn't there? There was a...
Oh, they had the Japanese at Cowra.
Yeah.
They were different prisons.
Yeah.
The Japs were bad buggers, weren't they? They tried to escape.
But weren't there a whole lot of Italians that were sent to different places where they were treated really badly?
Mm, they might be. They might have gone out somewhere, but they were certainly treated well at that place. They
treated well at, yeah.
Mm. But the only way our men, see, there was a tobacco shortage, cigarette tobacco, you couldn't get cigarettes. The only way our blokes on the orchard could get cigarettes, and that was buy them off the prisoners, shove them in the packet.
That's a fantastic story.
I remember all the cigarettes were Cooey and Caravan and Ajax, and I don't know whether they were American or what they were. But the only way our blokes could get them, and now and again, if we got sixpence, we could buy a chocolate off them, you know, or a tin of peanuts.
And did they have to wear the red uniform all the time?
All the time, mm. Yeah. And then once a month, the boss had put five horses in the trolley and taken them to the Lutheran church at Birdwood. And all the way to Birdwood, he was allowed to pick up all the other prisoners on the way, all out through Cuddly Creek and up to Gummaracker and that. He'd have a full trolley load when he got there, and they'd be singing and shouting. You'd hear them coming home for miles, you know. Singing all the Italian songs because, you know, they only knew two words when they got to Australia. That was bullshit and you bastard. You imagine Australian troops, everything they said, you know.
Bullshit.
Shut up.
Yeah. So did many of them learn English?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they all learned English very good.
Yeah,
especially Dorio. He was a northern Italian, big bloke, rural gentleman, you know.
So you were friends with them?
Oh, of course,
It wasn't like they were...
No, they were treated as equal.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. One of them was a bit of a hairdresser. He used to cut all the blokes' hair on the orchard.
And you were never scared of them?
No, no way. No way. Get down there and listen to some of their stories, you know. Eventually, one of the families moved out, and then the Italians went into that house and they cooked for themselves. They could do their own cooking at one point.
Yeah.
And the cunning buggers, we had a big walnut tree over the wood heap, massive big walnut tree. And when the walnuts fell, we always have some walnuts, you know. But this year, the Italians knocked them all down. They were green. They still had the green husk on. They took the whole lot.
Pickled them.
Took them down in their wood stove. And just slowly cooked them till the husk come off and had all the walnuts.
Yeah. All of them.
Too smart for us.
Yeah. So what if they didn't sell them back to you?
Bought them. Yeah.
So did families ever keep in touch? Like, and how did they get to leave after the war? Was it, were they just sort of set free?
The Italians,
They
had to all go back to Italy. They all had to go back. But by that time, these Fiori and Giacomino, they had tins, they used to have all their money in tobacco tins, the old Lucky Strike tobacco tins. And they had all this money crammed in there. There was a lot of money they had over the war. They'd made selling all this gear. They could get all they wanted from the army truck and then sell it to everybody, you know. And whether they took that money off them as they repatriated them back to Italy, I don't know. Or whether they were allowed to keep all that money. I've no idea what happened there. But
so they were better off financially than, like, your family?
Just about. Yeah. I mean, they're a long way from home.
Emotionally.
They didn't really know where they were. There was no communications with anybody over there.
Did you ever hear anything from any of them?
No, no.
After they left?
Only one, Otto Menz had one out there by Cuddly Creek. He had one at his place. I knew he'd come back. He married Otto Menz's daughter.
So he went back to Italy, and then as soon as he could, came back over?
He came straight back because by that time, Otto Menz's daughter had a little baby. He was doing all right.
Yeah. Oh, that's a fabulous story. And would they just work on the property? They weren't allowed to go anywhere else?
They weren't allowed to go off the property without Fred taking them to church.
Yeah, yeah, so that was the only place
they didn't ever come to market. They didn't do any market stuff. But no, they could roam around on the orchard, and they knew where all the best fruit was and what everything was doing as though they were running the place, you know.
And were there Italians that they could ever speak to? Did they ever speak, you know, Italians that lived in Australia?
Oh, there'd be Italians in Australia, yeah.
But they didn't ever...